This is May Bressel. It is tape number 860, May the 30th, 1988. Last week I was talking about matters pertaining to the Robert Kennedy assassination and the interesting fact that Marina Oswald had in her diary the name Schicklgruber, Adolf H., and commented upon that. And a long listener to World Watchers went immediately to his own private library, collects books on these matters, and looked up the origin of the Schicklgruber name that he remembered was in the book The Mind of Adolf Hitler. That was written by Walter Langer, and interestingly enough, it was written in 1943 at the request of Wild Bill Donovan, the very year that the Nazis were meeting and deciding to go underground, and also they were working with our OSS and making arrangements for their transfer to America after the war. Then this book was assigned, and the Mind of Adolf Hitler goes into the rantings and ravings of Hitler and says that within 2 years he will commit suicide. They predicted all of that, which of course I don't believe now ever happened. There isn't evidence to support the idea that it happened. But in that same book, The Mind of Adolf Hitler, Dr. Langer, has a chapter called The Hitler Family, and he explains the confusion in identifying Hitler's family tree because there was different spellings for the name. There was H-I-E-D-L-E-R, and when he first joined the Nazi party, it was H-I-T-T-L-E-R. And in this book, The Mind of Adolf Hitler, on page 110, 111, and page 112, it goes into the fact that his father, Alois Hitler, A-L-O-I-S Hitler, who was his father, was the illegitimate son of a woman named Maria Schicklgruber, S-C-H-I-C-K-L-G-R-U-B-E-R, just the one that was written in Marina's book, the same Schicklgruber, that Alois was the son of this Schicklgruber, and that he was, the book goes on to suggest that he was the illegitimate son of Maria Anna Schicklgruber, and that she married a man, Johann George, G-E-O-R-G, without the Heidler, but this wasn't, in fact, the father of Adolf Hitler, that Alois Hitler, Hitler's father, had a different father. And this book goes into allegations of two writers, Mr. Tyson and Mr. Kohler, K-O-E-H-L-E-R, that claim that Chancellor Dollfuss of Austria ordered the Austrian police to conduct a thorough investigation to Hitler's family when Hitler was getting interested in poking into Austria. As a result of this investigation, a secret document was prepared that proved that Maria Anna Schicklgruber happened to be living in Vienna when she conceived her child, who became Alois Hitler, Hitler's father. At that time, she was employed as a servant in the home of Baron Rothschild. As soon as the family discovered her pregnancy, she was sent back to a home in Speidel, Germany, where Alois was born. If this is true, that one of the Rothschilds is the real father of Alois Hitler, Adolf Hitler's grandfather, it would make Adolf a quarter Jew. But I think even more important, it would explain a lot of the events that happened in his life and how he was funded by the Rothschilds, and the international bankers took an interest in Adolf Hitler immediately following World War I, when they were ready to rearm Germany and put their interest in a particular leader that would get back the monarchies and the wealth of Europe by attacking the evil communism at the other end. And this article says that that according to these sources, Adolf Hitler knew of the existence of the documents of his background and his real grandfather and the incriminating evidence it contained, and that in order to obtain it, he precipitated events in Austria that initiated the assassination of Dollfuss. And then this book goes on to say reasons for supporting this idea is that Johann Heidler, or George Heidler, didn't claim his son, Alois, until 35 years after he was born and after he had married the mother and the mother was dead. Then he came forward and said, I'm Alois's father. This is 35 years later. And that if the legacy were left by Heidler on the condition that Alois take his name, it would have not been possible for him to change it later to Hitler. And then this article goes on to explain that the intelligence and behavior of Alois, Hitler's father, as well as that of his two sons, Adolf and his brother, is completely out of keeping with that usually found in Austrian peasant families. They point out that their ambitiousness and extraordinary political intuition are much more in harmony with the Rothschild tradition, and that Alois Schicklgruber, if he was a Schicklgruber, left his home at an early age and went to Vienna where his mother had worked, and this would be important for his son Alois. And it goes on to say that he lived in Vienna and had friends with people who were Jewish, one family by the name of Prince, that would fit in with the Rothschild connection. So I just thought I'd throw that in because of the name of Schicklgruber and the origin of how Hitler took the name, and maybe he was proud that his grandmother was knocked up by a Rothschild, and maybe that accounts for the way money poured into him. He would have to have the talent to do what he did, but they would willingly pour the money knowing who he is. Now, June the 4th this week is the 20th anniversary of the murder of Robert Kennedy. 20 years ago, on May 29th, 1968, Rose Kennedy was here on the Monterey Peninsula. You long listeners and subscribers know this story. Some of you newer ones don't. She was campaigning for Robert Kennedy, and I put a letter in her hand. I said it was a poem because it was John Kennedy's birthday, and I wrote a poem for him. And inside was an envelope explaining how Robert Kennedy would be killed, that there was a scope at the back of his neck, that it would be impossible for him to become president of the United States because they had not exposed the people who killed John Kennedy, and therefore they weren't going to allow Robert to be president either. And, of course, within 6 days, Robert Francis Kennedy was dead. Now, I saw the movie Manchurian Candidate this weekend. I saw it on Saturday, and then I went back again on Sunday because it is filled with symbolism and suggestions and implications that are important to the succession of presidents, how we select our presidents, what happened to John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and even the people that would be president if they could, that have been offed on the way various ways, subtle but still not around. And we know that the CIA set up assassination teams in May of 1960 with Robert Mayhew and Santos Trafficante and Carlos Marcello and John Rosselli and so forth. That included Frank Sturgis, who was at Dealey Plaza. But we also know, or should know, that the CIA was doing mind control experiments well underway by 1953. Now, this movie was made, the book was written in 1961 by Richard Condon, the Manchurian Candidate, but he had to know a lot about American political methods of how we were going to choose our presidents in the future. And this is very important because we used Klaus Barbie to get rid of the resistance movement in France to make sure that all the leftists along the way were knocked out. And we sent Lucky Luciana to Naples, Italy, to work with Navy intelligence and begin to set up death squads to eliminate political organizers, labor organizers. And Richard Condon wrote this book in 1961. He had to have a lot of knowledge about mind control. And Condon had to know a lot about how mind control would be used, select the candidates for president that the power structure wanted. We don't have a monarchy with succession of people, but out there are these international bankers and people who decide a long time ago. And he knew that mind control was a tool of political assassinations along the way. Now, Richard Condon also wrote what he calls a novel, Winter Kills, which I have, and I'm going to have to read again now, because this story is about the John Kennedy assassination and implies that Joe Kennedy and his father, even with a group of people, wanted him murdered. The book came out in 1974, and on the flyer, the description of Winter Kills, it describes this very important novel, most important of Condon's in 20 years. He touches on the assassination of a president, and they say it's sardonic comedy, satirical. You can imagine how funny it is. And Winter Kills is a stunning addition to Legends of Violent Death of Princes. 14 years after the murder of President T. Keegan, K for Kennedy, his extraordinarily wealthy and powerful family, that's Joe Kennedy and his half-brother Nick, learned through a deathbed confession that their beloved president brother's son was not killed by a lone psychopath, but the victim of a mysterious conspiracy. And through this book, Condon talks about American mythology, oil kings, movie queens, the Queen of Diamonds, maybe, venal police, the CIA, organized crime, And Winterkill is about looking into the labyrinth of who really killed the president. And, of course, he comes to the wonderful conclusion that it's his own family. So I have to read it again. But Condon knows a lot. Now, when you see that movie that Frank Sinatra had, and you realize that Sinatra owned the rights to Manchurian Candidate, and also another movie I'm going to discuss with you, it makes the movie, of course, much more interesting. Now, Sinatra is the person who arranged for Marilyn Monroe to meet John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy. Well, she had some affairs with John Kennedy. It was Robert that she really was very close to. And it was Sinatra who introduced her to the Kennedys through Kennedy's brother-in-law, Peter Lawford, who went to his grave just about a year ago without revealing what really happened. And the Marilyn Monroe calls he was getting when she was dying, and she was calling him. Now, it was the same Frank Sinatra who placed another control on the President of the United States, and that was Judith Exner. And Sinatra owns the movie and stars in the movie, Manchurian Candidate, and he was the one who put Judith Exner, the woman who belonged to the Mafia, Sam Giancana and John Rosselli, of the CIA, hired by the CIA for death squads. Sinatra is the kingpin, he's still alive, who introduced Exner, who's dying of cancer, and introduced one to bed down with John Kennedy, and the other to be with Robert Kennedy, and that's Marilyn Monroe. Now, there is a book called American Tragedy, I believe it's by Theodore Dreiser, but that isn't what I want to refer to now. I want you to think about what happened in the fact that John Kennedy was gunned down in 1963, and the people who did it got away. In Manchurian Candidate, this person is programmed to assassinate, but there's never police or investigation. And in one matter where he assaults this gentleman from Korea that he recognizes, and they have a bitter fight, and he almost kills him, he's taken to the police department. The police pick him up, and then they call Washington, D.C. to the Army, and the Army releases him. So there's no question of guilt. These people are just killed. And like the Manchurian Candidate, the killers are out large, doing just what they're supposed to do, and there's no question of justice. Now, John Kennedy was gunned down in 63. Robert Kennedy was gunned down in 68. Jack Ruby died of a three-week cancer in Dallas. And then the opponents of people who of candidates who would want to be president, opponents possibly of Ronald Reagan's campaign, such as Adlai Stevenson, died of poison, Jacob Javits, of Lou Gehrig's disease, Hubert Humphrey, of poison, Nelson Rockefeller, I believe he was poisoned by Megan Marshak. He died of a mysterious drink of wine and keeled over in New York City. And just as Manchurian Candidate shows the processes of killing various people just up to the point where you can get the candidate select into the place of nomination, we have handled all the people, would-be people who could be running for president of the United States, something happens to them. In matter of fact, the week that Joe Biden announced that he was going to run for president of the United States was the week that his embolism started and he had his problems. Lawrence Harvey, who stars in Manchurian Candidate, died of cancer. Marilyn Monroe was murdered. Judith Exner is dying of cancer. Sam Giancana, involved with Sinatra and the CIA and the electoral processes by which bullets decide them, was gunned down in Chicago. John Rosselli was cut up in pieces and put in a drum offshore in Florida, and Lee Harvey Oswald, the patsy, was shot. So there's about 15 deaths just related to this American tragedy around John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and in the ilk or milieu of what the Manchurian Candidate is about. Now, I got the impression after seeing the movie and this past week reading two books on Sinatra. I didn't finish the Kitty Kelly, but I went through certain portions that I wanted, looked up in the index, and I'll read more of it later, and then read a full book on Frank Sinatra, another one. And the impression I got is that Frank Sinatra, of course, his whole career and youth, his whole life was tied to the Mafia. And the general impression I get is that he was sent into the Kennedy camp to destroy the two Kennedys on the guise of being their friends. And if they were linked enough to the Mafia, they'd be discredited. And if they disassociated themselves, the Mafia would take care of them. And that Sinatra was long friends with a gambling syndicate, the members of Navy intelligence like Lucky Luciana and Sam Giancana of the CIA and so forth. and the Cubans before the Bay of Pigs operation in Cuba, close to the gaming table operators like Frank Sturgis, who came to this country, the associations of Richard Nixon and the Mafia, and Sinatra and the Mafia, are much tighter than any interest that Sinatra would have gung-ho for the presidency of Kennedy in 1960, and then turning against him in 1961. And at that time, this book, Manchurian Kennedy, was written, and I believe it could have even been a threat. He told Kennedy he was going to make it, asked him for permission, and to me it was an overt threat to John Kennedy to have it come out this time. Now, Lucky Luciano went to Italy. All of you know the story, or most of you went to Naples. He was released by Tom Dewey, the same man that prosecuted him in New York. Dewey ran for president with Earl Warren, became head of the Warren Commission. And Frank Sinatra was in Cuba in 1947 seeing Luciano, and he also was in Naples seeing Lucky Luciano, and Luciano was in Navy intelligence. Then Sinatra worked closely with the Robert Mayhew, Howard Hughes group from Vegas, Mayhew of the CIA and FBI that set up the hit teams with Trafficante and friends of Sinatra's. So you get Navy intelligence, CIA, and FBI, and the hub of the Sinatra activity in Cuba happened just before the Bay of Pigs, when Castro took over the gaming tables. And Sinatra was part of going to Cuba. His close friends, the Fischetti brothers, were there. They all went down to pay their respects to Luciano in 1947. And these contacts of Richard Nixon and Mafia began very strongly when he got out of the Navy by 1946. And he was put in the House of Representatives by Howard Hughes and ran against Jerry Voorhees. Now, several years later, after Sinatra's in Cuba with these top mafia people, the Kefauver Committee got together in 1950, and Robert Kennedy was showing a inkling or anger at the mafia role in this country already, and there would be no reason for Sinatra to support the two Kennedy brothers. And I might say, as soon as he was severed from John Kennedy, he became the closest friend of Spiro Agnew, who was planning a coup in this country, even a plan to kill Nixon to make himself president, that Squad 19. And he became very close to Ronald Reagan, and he was married in the home of the Annenbergs. And Sinatra's friends became, as soon as the Kennedys were undone, the very, very right-wing, far-right-wing Republicans of the United States. You know, it's one thing to switch parties from Democratic to Republican, but it didn't make sense for him to be so close to Kennedy, but by being close, close in quotes, he could fix Robert Kennedy up with Marilyn Monroe, and then they proceeded to have her wiretapped, which cut the hands off of Robert Kennedy as the Attorney General in terms of any investigations, then fixed Judith Exner up with John Kennedy, so that the role of Sinatra arranging these women for the two Kennedy brothers, I don't believe, was out of kindness. And when you see the Manchurian Candidate, I had the feeling that Frank Sinatra was even one of those people, just like the fellow who had the lead in the movie that Lawrence Harvey played, because he had a very volatile temper. He would hit people, sock them. He wasn't sociable. And for somebody who was so successful, he was like a time bomb, always going off, always fighting, and so forth. So in the milieu of Luciano, Navy Intelligence, Mayhew, Rosselli, Giacana, CIA, we have somebody like Sinatra, very close to them, and one of his closest relationships, described well by Kitty Kelly, was Sam Giacana, who, before the CIA found him good enough to hire, had proved his bona fides by killing at least 200 people. Then he was qualified to work for the CIA. Now, in 1947, as I say, Sinatra was in Naples. He was in Cuba with Luciano. He was with Carlos Marcella and all the top mafiosa. But an interesting thing happened in his career in 1953, and that's important. Manchurian Candidate was written in 61, made into a film in 62. In 1953, Frank Sinatra made a movie called Suddenly. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. I don't even remember the movie Suddenly. But it's a movie that he made, and it's about the murder of a president of the United States. And in Kitty Kelly's book on Sinatra, she said that Frank Sinatra literally owned Suddenly, which is the murder of a president, and he owned Manchurian Candidate. Both of them were taken off the screen as soon as John Kennedy had been murdered, but Suddenly was made in 1953. And in Irving, Texas, a little suburb outside of Dallas, Texas, where Lee Oswald had rented a rooming house, the movie, suddenly, the Frank Sinatra movie, was playing November the 20th, 1963. And Lee Harvey Oswald went to see that movie. It was 10 years old, and it just happens to be showing on the murder of the president the very week, 2 days before the president is to arrive in the United States. Now, I don't hold that Lee Harvey Oswald shot the president, but I believe he was a zombie walking around to become a patsy. In the Manchurian Candidate, there's about 13 people who are rounded up by the Koreans and taken to Manchuria. And Manchuria, in that time period, is where Charles Willoughby was working with Japanese experiments. Remember, after the war, where they were experimenting on Americans and doing all kinds of work on them and shooting them when their legs were frozen and so forth. But Manchuria was an area of experimentation by the Japanese that the United States decided to use that evidence and experimentation for our own purposes. When the story came out last week that somebody from the University of Minnesota was going to use Nazi files of medical experiments, there was a little bit of a ruckus about it. But nobody talks about Charles Willoughby, whose name is Carl Wiedenbach. I wrote about him in my Rebel article on the Nazi links, the Kennedy assassination. And he was the one that wanted to save the Manchurian experiments done by the Japanese up till 1945. So it would be easy to be continuing those operations and experiments in that area. And according to this story, the Koreans took these fellows during the Korean War up to Manchuria, but it could be the South Koreans that took them up to Manchuria, where we had done accepted the experiments of the Japanese at that time. Now, knowing that this book suddenly came out in 1953, I looked up when our mind control programs would be taking place, because it's important to go back to what the meaning was that Sinatra made both of these films, owned both of these films. Oswald went to see one. So I got out my joint hearings before the Select Committee on Intelligence and the Subcommittee on Health and Scientific Research. The hearings began August 3, 1977. Project MKUltra, the CIA's program of research into behavioral modification. And I have a whole book on the subject. I'm not going into it now. But the first operations were Project Chatter, a Navy program that started in the fall of 1947 with amazing results on truth drugs, overseas experiments, and so forth. And in 1947 is when Sinatra went to see Luciana, and Lucky Luciana was working for Navy intelligence, and we were working over there in Italy and with Navy intelligence on mine control experiments. So the question is, was Sinatra himself, has he always been a time bomb, making these movies, bedding these people down with each other, being used as a conduit so that, say, if Richard Nixon was selected heir to be president, which I alleged in my first published article about him, right after Navy intelligence, and then he ran against Jerry Voorhees in the House, and then the Senate against Helen Douglas, and then he became the vice president for 8 years, and I felt that, you know, when he ran in 1960, if he didn't win, then the person he ran against could be killed, and he could get back into office back on track. So 1947 is when Project Chatter began, and Project Bluebird Artichoke began in 1950. The CIA director began that for memory enhancement, and also you could reduce the memory, and mind control and biological experiments and chemical experiments on Americans in 1950. And that movie on the assassination was made in 1953. The Office of Scientific Intelligence, OSI, studied scientific advancements, and their excuse was hostile powers. They led Bluebird Artichoke experiments, and in 1952, the responsibility for Artichoke was transferred from OSI to the Inspection and Security Office. And MK Naomi began then, and these were more experiments done in the 50s, and in 1952, for covert use and clandestine meetings, and for the TDS, Technical Services Division, and biological material. And these mind control programs were done at Fort Detrick in 1952. And in 1953, Sinatra is making this movie, as I say, about the assassination of a president. Probably, I don't know if it is or not, the first picture since World War II of the murder of a president of the United States made by Sinatra that Oswald's going to see 10 years later. And we were well into mind control programs from 47 to 1952 when that was made. Now, in 1952, Frank Sinatra had a friend in Las Vegas. His name was Jack Entratter, and he wanted Sinatra to sing at his hotel, at the Sands Hotel, but Sinatra couldn't do it. He was singing at the Flamingo Hotel instead. And then all of a sudden, the owner of the Flamingo, Gus Greenbaum, and his wife, according to this book on Sinatra, mysteriously are slashed to death in Phoenix. The murders are never solved, again, like Manchurian Candidate. The only rule in Vegas is kill out of town. Don't kill in Vegas. And this book on Sinatra said Greenbaum evidently knew too much about somebody in Vegas. His wife must have known the killer. And, of course, as soon as they are dead and Frank had his contract with them at the Sands Hotel, then he can move to the Flamingo because the boss is dead. And in 1953, he was given the presidential suite. They had a great special presidential suite, and he stayed there, and he stayed there at the very time that he was making a movie on the murder of the president that Oswald is going to see just before the assassination. The movie is called Suddenly, produced, it came out in 1954. Preceded the the filming went on in 53, and then the final date on it is 54. And the description of the movie says, Sinatra led a trio of paid assassins who take over a house in a small town where the president will pass on his way to a fishing trip. White knuckle thriller with Sinatra, excellent, in thoroughly detestable role. The rest of the cast is equally fine. Suddenly, incidentally, is the name of the town. So I just thought I'd share that with you because we may have to look up these video services that have these obscure movies. It isn't one that we think about all the time, but is one that Frank Sinatra took off of circulation after Kennedy was killed, just as he took off Manchurian Candidate. And Frank's friends not only mysteriously disappeared when he had contracts with them and his mentor wanted him somewhere else, but he was very close, Sam Giacano, who had done at least 200 murders. And in 1954, the year that he made Suddenly that it came out, he was very, very close to Bugsy Siegel, who is described in the books on Sinatra as the Mafia Chief for Murder Incorporated. So Lucky Luciano of New York Murder Incorporated was prosecuted, put in jail, and released by the man who prosecuted him for Navy intelligence, Luciano. Sinatra's in Naples with Luciano. He's in Cuba with Luciano. He's in Hollywood with Bugsy Siegel of Murder Incorporated. And I don't believe when we hear stories that the Mafia killed John Kennedy, that is the main story. The main story is Luciano, Navy intelligence, Mayhew, CIA, that the government agencies keep control of the candidates by letting the Mafia do the murders, and in return, they don't get prosecuted for any of the killings. They look the other way. So as I say, try and find, suddenly we'll all look for that and see about the psychopathic assassin who guns down the president. Now, there were a lot of articles, of course, about Frank Sinatra's being close to organized crime and crime figures. And when Ronald Reagan came into office, there were stories about the Rat Pack comes back and the role of these various mafia figures around Sinatra, who now is close to Ronald Reagan. As soon as the two Kennedys are killed, or before, after John Kennedy dies, he beds up, and certainly after Robert Kennedy, he's very, very close then to Spiro Agnew and to Richard Nixon and the powers that be, all the right-wing conservatives. But one article I have about Sinatra and his career said that when he wanted in the 1950s to make a comeback in the movie From Here to Eternity, Mr. Harry Cohn at Columbia didn't want him to have the part. So what happened was, according to this article, the method they used that was later fictionalized in The Godfather, they put that famous horse's head that was cut off in the bed to scare Harry Cohn and give the part to Frank Sinatra, implying this will be you, and going to bed and finding the horse's head. According to this article I have, this is what happened to get Sinatra the role From Here to Eternity, and it was used against Harry Cohn. And with that, we'll just take a one-second break, turn over the tape, and then I'll continue the threat, or what I believe was a threat, right from that point on, that Sinatra then gave to John Kennedy by making the Manchurian Candidate.